All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio, episode 41. I have Jason back once again due to overwhelming responses from all the space episodes. We had many requests from folks to do the ISS, to do Virgin Galactic, and to do SpaceX, and we are going to do each of them. As for Virgin Galactic, you know, with the mouthpiece and the face of that privately held corporation being Sir Richard Branson, I had written an article for the Higher Side Chats, I don't know, it's been a year or two now, I don't remember how long ago, where I got into the idea of what it means to be knighted by the Queen. And as I started to research into it, I found two things. The first thing I found is it's not easy to understand what is being conferred on someone who is knighted. The second thing I found out was that there are levels of knighthood. In the case of Jimmy Page, and I hope I'm getting this right, this is from memory a couple years ago, I think he's a knight or a commander of the realm or something like that. I don't have that exactly right. But Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin was knighted, and he's some kind of a knight of the realm or something to that effect. When I tried to dig in to understand what had been conferred on him, I couldn't really get anywhere. Having said that, as Jason and I began to talk about taking apart Virgin Galactic, which will be one of our next shows, there's no getting away from the man who was knighted by the Queen sitting in the middle of the New Mexican desert in a place called Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, putting up what I consider to be a fraudulent spaceport. You know, they've been at it 15 years. They can't take a damn vehicle up to the edge of space, drop it back down, and reuse it in a day or whatever their criteria is. It's ludicrous. In 1968, we are told NASA put their first Apollo guys in space. In less than a year, they told us they put guys on the moon and brought them back. These timelines do not jive. If this was possible in the 60s, you know, putting a man in space supposedly for the first time in 68, and then straight up to 69 where they put a guy on the moon and bring him back, which is what they are telling us. How is it that with all the modern technology and experience, Sir Richard Branson can't even take a vehicle to the edge of space, drop it back down, reuse it some period of time? It's nonsense is what it is. But my belabored point here is, I believe Jason and I are going to take another run at trying to demonstrate or discover in some way what it is that's being conferred on these people that are working for the Queen that are knighted. It's an interesting thing. There are levels of knighthood. Clearly, if you're knighted, there must be perks and other things or responsibilities that go with it, one imagines. But like I said, the first time I went at this, I found very little. So that will probably be included if we can find more, and we will talk about it in the Virgin Galactic episode. It may be one more space episode. We may opt to do Virgin Galactic and SpaceX in the same episode, but we'll just see where it goes. Truth is, overwhelming response. So many people submitting their research, coming to the conclusion that, yeah, man, these worldwide space agencies are not telling the truth about nearly everything. It's been wildly popular, to say the least. So here we go. We're going to jump in and let's take apart the International Space Station. You know, the International Space Station is not far away from the moon landing. In my view, the moon landing is not a gray area. It is flat out fraud. It is flat out provable fraud from any individual who chooses to set aside the nonsense and scrutinize what we've been handed. The only thing about the International Space Station is that there is a light we can see that tends to be very close or on the mark to the schedule we are handed. I've seen it a handful of times. I even saw it visibly through a telescope across the moon before I had the ability to film. And just so you know, I mention this again, that light crosses the moon in less than a second, probably close to half a second. It is very darn quick. You blink, you miss. Anyhow, let's jump in to episode 41, the International Space Station cartoon. All right, man. Welcome back to Crow 777 Radio Podcast. This is episode 41. We have had such an overwhelming response from all the space episodes that we've done that we're actually going to address some requests. We had people request that Jason and I tackle the International Space Station, which this show will do. We've had quite a few people ask us to tackle SpaceX and, of course, the fraudulent
Virgin Galactic there in the middle of the New Mexican desert in a place called Truth or Consequences, of course. So that will be the lineup for the next couple shows. I had initially set out to do two or three of them, but the response has been overwhelming. So many people are sending emails and messages and doing their own research and really coming to the conclusion that these space agencies have not been telling us the truth. It's that simple. But with any further ado, welcome, Jason.
Well, hello again.
So you ready to tackle the International Space Station, or the ISS as it's known? I suppose I should mention that's basically a version of 9/11 encoded, particularly if you look at it from the point of view of even in simple numerology, it's going to come back to ones and nines. If you reduce it all the way down, you would get nines, but there's an S exception for some numerology that would keep it at 19. But I would point out in Hebrew and other ancient dialects, the vowels are often swapped at random or implied, which again, if you looked at ISS, you can imply the other I and flat out, make it 9/11. So there it is.
Now that's an interesting way to start things off. I did what I always do, and I looked at the history and tried to get as many facts as presented from mainstream sources. And, I thought maybe the space station would be the one that could possibly have some validity to it, just because they're not doing anything insane like going to another planet. So, but as with everything, I found pretty major inconsistencies. So,
well, let's address that real quick. As a guy who's spent a lot of time behind a telescope and observing the sky, I can tell you flat out, there is a light that comes by at scheduled times that is supposed to be the International Space Station. You see a hell of a lot of faked video of it transiting the moon and in other ways. And I would point out one of the ways you know the video is being faked is if you shoot anything transiting the moon is backlighting the object so well that the object should be black. Many of the faked videos, first of all, show a very crisp ISS in the shape you would expect to see it, but it's white or gray. This is not possible. But I would further point out, even the fraudulent, in my view, fraudulent video that's been provided by NASA is shot at a very high frame rate. Now, one time I did optically see what is supposed to be the ISS transit the moon. It was before I was filming. it crosses the moon and it crosses the moon in much less than a second. I mean, like a half a second. If you blink, you miss it. And if you look at some of the created video from NASA, you will see just how quickly this is supposed to be traveling. But this on its own tells us something. So many of the things that we are supposed to, that we can film, and then these guys are going to try to tell us those are satellites in low Earth orbit. Well, it can't be. The supposed ISS proves it, because whatever it's traveling, 17,000 miles an hour, goes across the face of a full moon in less than a second. Well, how can it be all these little objects that I've filmed? I mean, some of them are crossing the moon in 15 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, all the way up to a minute. I have objects transiting the moon for roughly a minute. And this begins to show the construct. And just to be clear, in my view, nothing goes above what we call low Earth orbit. When I say that, I'm not talking about what we call space. I'm talking about our atmosphere. So there it is. There's my cards on the table. So over to you, Jason.
All right. To give the background on the ISS, according to the CASAS website, and that stands for the Center for the Advancement of Science and Space, the official history for the ISS states that it took over 10 years and over 30 missions to complete. In 2011, NASA chose this organization to be the sole manager of the International Space Station U.S. National Laboratory. The stated mission of CASAS is to maximize the use of this unparalleled platform for innovation, which can benefit all humankind and inspire a new generation to look to the stars. Thing I thought funny was about that is it'd be nice to actually see stars when you look out the window.
It would actually be nice to see some unparalleled innovation. That line is reminiscent of the space lab. You know, we were told, oh, we're going to save all this money, put space lab up there, do all this amazing science. The most amazing science I ever saw was they supposedly sprouted some seeds in space. So they spent a gazillion dollars to plant some seeds, I guess. And here on the International Space Station, what science have we seen that's so innovative?
Well, the only ones I saw in videos were them kind of playing around with little plastic things with water in it, but I'm not going to slam that. We don't know what exactly they're supposed to be doing, and we just don't, you know, haven't seen it. I don't know as far as that goes. But as far as the dollar figure, it has an estimated cost of $100 billion, and it's been built through international cooperation. It is supposed to be in orbit approximately 260 miles up, and it's supposed to orbit the Earth once every 90 minutes, attaining speeds up to 17,500 miles per hour. The ISS is supposed to have come from scrap plans of the proposed NASA Freedom Space Station, which was proposed during the Reagan administration in the early 80s. It started off on November 20th, 1998, when a Russian Proton rocket takes the Zarya module into orbit. It's funded by the U.S., but built by Russia. Then 2 weeks later, on December 6, 1998, the space shuttle Endeavour takes the U.S.-built Unity module into space and berths it with Zarya. This is considered the official beginning of the construction of the ISS. Other modules followed, with the first crew arriving in the year 2000. Now, from what I could gather, there are currently 32 modules, with four more currently scheduled to be taken up and attached in 2017. The whole thing is said to have the volume of a five-bedroom house, or approximately the equivalent of two Boeing 747 jetliners end-to-end. It can hold a continuous crew of six, plus visitors. The modules come from the United States, Russia, Japan, and Europe.
So I guess that list of countries for me would be the usual suspects. They're all complicit in this. And, you know, it's funny, like now in the news where they're kind of pushing all this stress and pre-war idea with Russia. And yet we've had a space agency supposedly with Russia doing the whole ISS thing here for a lot of years. But I would point out another thing I noticed in your intro there about the beginning of this whole supposed ISS thing. Is that over 10 years, they did 30 missions. And so look where we are now. All of a sudden, shuttles blew up, and they were too dangerous or too expensive or too something, you know, that we had to walk away from them. It smacks of fraud when you begin to logically take apart that early on, over a 10-year period, they're doing all these missions with supposedly these massive components going into space. Not a problem. And then we get beyond all that, and suddenly everything's blowing up all the time, and it's too dangerous, and Bush the Jr. even comes out at some point saying, we can't service the fraudulent space Hubble Space Telescope anymore. It's too dangerous. And, of course, there was an outcry from all the universities all over the world that think they're actually getting data from an instrument called the Hubble Space Telescope. But, you know, that's my take on it. When you look at the United States, Russia, Japan, and Europe, the European Space Agency, and I've already demonstrated that the European Space Agency is full of prunes. They're as fraudulent as any of them. I took apart the Rosetta mission where they supposedly landed on a comet, and I took apart the Juno mission. These things are nonsensical, but there it is from my point of view.
Well, it's all major Western nations obviously involved, but the counterargument to that would be, well, you'd have to be a well-functioning country to be able to put any money towards this, because obviously it's in the tens of millions of dollars. There are various proposals for continued expansion of the station up until 2020 is the current approximation when they want to run it to. So this isn't coming to an end anytime soon, unless, of course, they pull another disaster to make things come crashing down.
Well, you got to wonder. I mean, you just mentioned that they're currently at 32 modules. What happens when they get to 33? Are they going to start playing their little game? That's what I would suspect. I don't accept that this thing is in space. And I think enough videos have been taken apart showing the fraud. I mean, if something is there, there's no reason to play shenanigans. You film it, you show it. And this is not what we've seen, but I think we'll address that later on down the line.
Yeah, that's the confusing thing about the space station. Something is getting filmed. We're just not sure if it's there, then why the shenanigans. But anyway, all told, there's supposed to have been a total of 222 people that have lived or worked there, with 47 crews that have rotated throughout its history. So,
yeah, when you start to think about that, think about what that place must smell like.
That's about what I was going to get to.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. And not only that, when I was in the Houston Space Disneyland thing, they showed the toilets. It's a joke, man. You would be, not to be rude, but I mean, there would be feces and urine all over the place in a zero G place. There would be no good way to clean it. All these women with their long hair would be everywhere, skin. It would be a complete disaster. And we've been told that guys have been up there for, what, a year at a time? I think the twin guy, the guy that's supposedly a twin of Gabrielle Giffords, who is now famous for her hoax shooting. Senator, was she a congressperson or a senator? I think she's a congressperson. Yeah, she's been outed. She's a fraud, and her husband is supposedly one of a pair of twins. And I believe that guy was supposed to have been up there for, I don't know, what was it, over 100 days or a year? I've forgotten. A long, long time. And when you begin to logically look at what that place would be like, had 222 people, 47 crews, and people hanging out there for hundreds of days on end, not being able to take a shower, it would be a nightmare.
Yeah, and that's exactly the first thing I thought of. Human beings are not clean creatures. I mean, it's just a fact. Hair and dust would be getting everywhere. And what is dust? It's predominantly made up of dead skin cells. The place on camera always looks like a freshly cleaned movie set. You know, and maybe they have a reason for that. I don't know. No one's ever called them out on that for them to have to answer it. But I doubt very much they have high-end Hoover vacuums up there, you know?
No, it's, you know, it's strange your imagination. And not only that, there were times when they were breaking down the cost of each pound that went up, and it was like $10,000. I'm just pulling that out of the air. It was a lot of money for a pound of weight to go up because they're telling us they're doing it with rockets. I have seen footage of keyboards on the ISS, guitars, big stuffed animals, all kinds of stuff. And so if that would ever have been true, what they're showing you is that, you know, what's a keyboard weigh? It's got to be at least 6-7 pounds. That's tens of thousands of dollars, really? It just, none of it adds up to common sense, man.
Yeah, I saw a lot of those videos as well. And just what you said, I saw a guitar. I saw I think it's a cheaper Yamaha keyboard and several different stuffed animals. So, yeah, now maybe there's an allotment that they're allowed to bring, like, your personal effects so that you could feel more human. I could definitely see that, but it would be very cost prohibitive. That's very true.
Well, the thing that always comes down to is we're told that the Apollo missions, one of the reasons they ended was expense. And we were told that Skylab was going to save all kinds of money. Well, at one point during my YouTube channel, I went back and I looked it all up. In fact, Skylab and the shuttle missions cost many, many times what Apollo did. So if there's any truth to any of the arguments they make, this is nonsense. You're not going to spend tens of thousands of dollars to put a keyboard on the ISS. And besides that, you actually have a supposed lab in space. Are you really going to be wasting your time playing keyboards and guitars, or are you going to be doing science? Are you going to be doing things that matter? Are you going to be involved in serious endeavors? And again, this is not what we see. Every time we see one of these fake videos from the International Space Station, there's not a damn serious thing going on. They are bouncing water bubbles around. They are showing us how to wash your hair without water. They are doing all these mundane things that don't even come close to justifying the cost you just mentioned.
Yeah, and even on here on Earth, if you were launching a rocket or even a plane, they have to take all the weight into consideration because weight has to translate into how much fuel to push that weight.
And not only that, presumably they're telling you, you know, we're going to do this until 2020, which is probably another bag of nonsense. My point would be is every little thing that would be put in a thing up there has to be dealt with. Of course, they'll probably make up the lie, which they have done a number of times, that they're just going to let it degrade and burn up into our atmosphere. But come on, we're talking about a small house here by their own account.
Yeah, that's something I don't understand. If the orbit is degrading, wouldn't you just put a thruster on it and push it back out a little ways? Now, maybe that's not possible. I don't know the physics behind that. But it seems like if you're going to spend this insane amount of money, you're not just going to throw it away.
Well, I've seen people go at that very question, Jason, where they are making the argument that anything in a low orbit is going to degrade over time, which means it would have to be corrected. I'm not a big math guy, so, you know, I can't give it my stamp of approval, but I think it's an interesting idea, and I think the arguments were well fashioned. If it is true that by NASA's own accounts, anything in a low orbit will degrade over time, well, then how is it staying up there unless they're readjusting? That's a pretty simple question.
Just logicking it out, I would assume that it takes X amount of years, like the Earth would be pulling it back in. That's what I assume they mean. And I guess if you're far enough out, it's a slow process. At least that's the way I'm taking the presentation as it is.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, they're claiming they've got some 32 modules and they keep adding on. Just when you begin to scrutinize what you're being presented with and you begin to take it apart, you're going to come up with all these questions. The problem is that at least a handful of those questions each time you go at it are going to begin to demonstrate that the ring of truth is not in this anywhere. And that totally sets aside all the nonsense video we've been handed. We could do 3 shows on the amount of nonsense video we've been handed. And these are not really arguable things. I did one not too long ago with some lady flipping water around inside this thing with electronics everywhere, trying to demonstrate how long-haired women wash their hair in this place that apparently has no military code for grooming, of all things. You know, you join the Marine Corps, you got to cut your hair, females as well. But on the ISS, they can go up with a pony mane. It begs for some credulity is, you know, every time I look at it, it begs for credulity. And again, the last video I did on the ISS videos was to show these sneaky cuts and the lighting effect they used to make it look like it was a continuous shot when in fact it would, I think it was cut 19 times.
Yeah, that's actually one of the points I put down. Well, multiple points is the editing and all that. The first one that really bothers me, though, if I really had to point this out, this thing is supposed to look be the size of like two aircraft, big jets end to end. This thing is also supposed to be 260 miles up. Now, if you go on Google Earth and look at an airport, look at a picture of a big old jet, just start pulling back and seeing how far till that gets lost in the shuffle, in the detail. Like, you can't see it more than a few miles up.
Right, and I did this experiment with the Aristarchus crater to demonstrate that the moon's not as far away as we've been told, using a naked eye object that's supposedly 250,000 miles away. But of course, we're using software, so there is going to be a difference between if we could really get our naked eye up. But with Google Earth, I think they allow you to go up 40,000 miles or something like that. You make a good point. This is exactly what I did with the crater, and I would urge people to do it. Go look at 2 747s tail to tail in Google Earth and zoom up till you can't see them anymore. Of course, the light that we see, that's another problem that I've had, because whenever the International Space Station, I have had a view of it with my naked eye with binoculars, and it's moving so quickly, it's not an easy thing to shoot. It could be done, but it would take some doing. And you'd really need high frame rates. You would need exceptional slewing skill with it to get it with a telescope. Maybe a telephoto would be a better way to do it. My point is this: as soon as it comes into view, it's lit. So what that would mean in the NASA orbital model is that the sun is lighting that thing. But the problem is it stays lit the whole time you see it, at least the handful of times that I have witnessed it, to include the time that I optically saw it transit the moon. And of course it was black. It was not lit at all as it transited the moon because the moon was backlighting it. But, yeah, go jump into Google Earth and look at 2 jumbo jets back to back, and then begin to reason it out and zoom and things like that.
Well, this is one of the things I actually wanted to hear specifically from your experiences. What did it look like, and at what distances do you think you were viewing things from?
Well, here's the problem. We're told it's roughly 260 miles, which is, by their argument, a space low Earth orbit, which I don't accept. But you're looking at a point of light, and it's a pretty darn bright point of light, and it's moving right along. I have seen some people who have actually shot the light. There is some sort of a shape there, and it's always been a question, how is this being done? You know, I had people on that tried to demonstrate that the ISS is modulating in the same way that high-altitude balloons do. They actually had the data and the graphs, and they could match almost one-to-one that the modulation up and down of the ISS matches what high-altitude balloons do. I've seen other people try to make the argument that maybe it's some kind of a balloon. However it's done, I would really like to know. One of those things I just mentioned is very interesting, and the other one leaves questions. Well, how the hell do you get a balloon to travel at that speed? I don't know. My point would be is we have enough video and data from the space agencies to understand that they're lying about the ISS. What we don't have is enough data about the light that goes by. But if you're a reasonable, logical person, to assume you're looking at an International Space Station is not the simplest argument. The simplest argument is you're looking at a light. you've seen all this fake video. You've seen all this data that you can take apart and it just doesn't add up. So how is it that people overlook these things and then say, well, there's a light there where they're saying it is, so automatically that's the space station? In my view, that's really where we start to lose solid logic. What we can know about it right now, it's a light. I have no idea how it's being done. And the truth is, I could probably know more if I spent a hell of a lot of time trying to get really, really good footage. It's just not the easiest thing to do.
Right. So you'd have to go chasing this thing down just to get anything whatsoever. And, you know, there's a lot of folks out there listening. We now know that people are interested in the work that we're doing here. I mean, this is the fourth show in a row we've done. And as you've said, people have been writing to you like crazy. I'm actually getting people writing to me about it now. And keep that coming. I love the fact that we're acting like a community to attack this problem together. And I love that idea. And I think we need to keep doing that. So anybody who's proficient with telescopes out there, let's see what we come up with, you know?
Right. Or even if you've got a good telephoto, my problem here is to do a shot of the ISS or what is called the ISS. You really need to be able to see horizon to horizon. If you're on water, that would be fantastic because you'd have a nice low horizon, but the thing's moving right along. And so for a handheld shot, that's going to be problematic because every time you're trying to track something with a handheld, you're going to get blur in the image of whatever it is you're tracking. If you did it with a tripod, you'd have to have skills. And again, if you did it with a telescope, you got to be a Mac daddy. I have tracked moving things like chem planes with a scope. Truth is, scopes are not made to track moving things. So eventually, I assume someone will provide more data and maybe we'll learn something more about what this light is or how it's being pulled off.
Well, this could definitely be a work in progress, and we could pick this up at another time if we get more to work with as far as observations.
Right. I think Randy in Houston, I hope I got this right, I've so many people send me footage, had got some footage of it. It was rough, but it was enough to see something.
Well, I still talk to him on a regular basis. I'll see if he's got anything.
Yeah.
So, moving along with our inconsistencies, and these aren't in any particular order. This is just as I was going through whatever I could find. And anybody who wants to do what I'm doing when I make lists up like this, I'm Googling, I'm going through YouTube, I'm trying to find everything I possibly can. I'm going to the official websites, anything I can do, and I'm just kind of picking all the information and putting them together. Now, obviously, there's not going to be any kind of order to it because I'm kind of doing it as I go along, but for anybody who wants to know more about any of this stuff that we've been talking about, this is all I'm doing. You know, I don't have some magic land I'm going to get information from. I'm just taking the time, and it takes hours and hours and hours to go through all this stuff.
Right, but it does demonstrate on YouTube alone, there is a plethora of people who have taken the time to take apart the pool filming that goes on, the vomit comet filming that goes on, and all the fraudulent video that we've been handed that we're told is being shot in space, even complete in some cases with people misspeaking while they're on camera live, saying things like they're in space and they're floating in harnesses, which has been pointed out. And someone from supposed news station asked them, well, where do you train? And they accidentally said a little bit west of where we are now. And he's supposed to be in the International Space Station, you know, but anyhow, go ahead, Jason.
Well, so women's hair doesn't seem to flow properly on camera. It seems frozen up in a really silly way, like it's permed or just lots of hairspray or gel or something. There was one shot with a female astronaut that absolutely looks no doubt to be green screened. The background right. image is static, you know, it's just no movement whatsoever. And what's funny is it was badly done because there's a loose cable in the background that if they were indeed on a space station in zero G, it would be moving around at least a little bit because you do see that in other shots. And this literally looks like it's just a picture in the background.
Right. And here's where an adult thinking with a higher mind instantly realizes the ring of truth is not here. And there's no reason for it. If you have a place called the International Space Station, you have a place to put a camera, you have a place to shoot HD footage, you can present it as it's shot. And that is not what we see. It has never been what we see. The hair thing became a big deal because at first it seemed like they were putting so much hairspray in it, it was like concrete. And it was like snapping back into position, clearly not in a zero-G environment. Or if they were on the vomit comet, still problems because it was moving in a way that was clearly being acted on by you know, other forces. But there have been videos taken apart of women with long hair on the ISS suspended upside down to get their hair to hang. And you can see the puffiness of their face, the squintiness of their eyes. There's been the whole hairspray thing. There have been people who have made the argument that it's being shot on a vomit comet, and part of the data they use to do that. Oh, I guess I should mention, if for people who don't know what the vomit comet is, it's basically a big hollowed out jet that goes on a parabolic arc. And at one point of the parabolic arc, you get roughly, I don't know, 30, 45 seconds.
I think it's 27 seconds I saw on a video.
Okay, I've seen different numbers, but that's fine. 27 seconds, not very long. So you get roughly half a minute of zero G from this parabolic plane. People have argued that they have made a mock-up or green-screened one of these vomit comets, and they've made it very convincing because they've timed out where the cuts are, and they've demonstrated that it does fit the pattern for a limited G weightless environment. Other things they have tried to demonstrate to show how they are faking the International Space Station video is there's a pool. I've forgotten, Jason. You just looked all this stuff up. Is it in Russia? Is that pool in Russia?
No, it's right outside the Johnson Space Center. It's actually one of the points I'm going to be getting to.
Okay. I always mess that up because I used to do searches for the pool, and at one point about a year ago, you could actually find hidden images or very low resolution images where you could see the green screen in the pool where the ISS mock-up. Anyhow, to get back to the point, people have used the argument that this is being shot in this big pool where the ISS mock-up is. And we know this has occurred because the Chinese got caught passing off spacewalk video with bubbles coming out of spacesuits. So clearly that was shot in a pool. But anyhow, I rambled a bit, Jason.
Well, to address the pool, there is a life-size but not entirely complete mock-up of the ISS in a large swimming pool at the Neutral Buoyancy Lab, which is a NASA facility located approximately 20 minutes from the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. So, and there's tons of video of this. This isn't even remotely being hidden. The mock-up is 40 feet below the pool's surface. It is stated that the water is crystal clear and totally calm, enabling you to see everything in detail. The pool is stated to be 202 feet long, 102 feet wide, and 40 feet deep, holding 6.2 million gallons of water. Now, the ISS is... What's that?
I was just going to say, I'm sure the numerologists would have fun with that, but go ahead.
The ISS is stated to be 350 feet by 240 feet currently. So as a whole, it won't fit into the pool. So the different modules that didn't fit are in different parts of the pool so they could do their training with them. Everything a training astronaut does in the pool is said to be a simulation as accurately as possible of what they would be doing in space.
So anyone who wants to go out and begin to look up images for the Neutral Buoyancy Lab, I did this some years ago. And as I stated, I could find a couple. There is a green screen. You can get images of it if you look hard enough, but it's like hidden. It retracts or rolls up or something. But here's the thing. When I was looking back then, what I noticed is like 98% of all the snapshots inside the pool area were shot with a fisheye lens. And every time I see that, I'm already saying, why not just shoot it with a regular lens? Why? What's the point? You could take three shots if you need them. You could do whatever you want to present these nice HD images, but instead they use a fisheye, which jacks up the whole image. It makes no sense. The argument, of course, is we're using a fisheye so we can fit, you know, all this area into one snapshot. But for my money, that's nonsense. People interested in seeing something like a lab of this type are interested in some quality imagery to see where all these amazing things are being done. And yet what we're being handed is fisheye snapshots. And again, if you dig, you can find a couple that show there is a green screen there, which means flat out they are filming.
Yep. And I didn't see the green screen in any of them, but there's certainly enough space for there to be the one there.
See, it seems like it rolls up. The one shot that I had found back then that was the best, you could see it just under the surface of the water all the way in the back of the shot, but you could see that it wasn't hanging down. So it seemed to me maybe it was being rolled up.
Well, since it's in water, I don't know, maybe there's some sort of physical property that they don't want it constantly rolled down anyway, you know?
Yeah, they probably just don't want people seeing, you know, that it's possible they're filming with a green screen in there. I would guess as well. Yeah, I mean, come on.
One of the other things that really stood out to me, and I noticed this very early on, a lot of the videos have very loud noise in the background that greatly resembles like you're on a jet. And I have flown a lot on commercial jetliners all over the country. And yeah, that's pretty much what it sounds like. Now, easy counter argument for that, of course, is that that's the air conditioning system or the life support system or whatever. And you know what? That one could be fair. But what I would ask is, why didn't I hear this stuff on Apollo or numerous other things that I've looked at in the past few weeks?
Well, there's a problem with that because not all supposed ISS video does not have this sound. On the clip that I posted, I don't know, a few months ago, right before I left San Diego, on the lady supposedly washing her hair with a waterless shampoo, but still using some water, flinging water all over the inside of that place, of all things. You could almost, I had isolated the audio around, you know, just kind of clipped her voice out so that I could hear that hum. And what some people had said, and I agree with it, it sounds like a jet engine, and it does, but you can hear it revving up. And one of the arguments that was made was that this was shot on the Vomit Comet, and you're hearing the engines react to the parabolic arc. This is a hard thing to prove, but again, we have plenty of ISS video where there is no big engine sound, so it just doesn't add up.
Right, and being an audio guy, that's things I listen for. Like, what am I hearing in the background? How, if they're faking this or if they're not faking it, there are things that should, there should be consistencies, you know? And a lot of people overlook the audio, but that the audio would be the thing that really is telling.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. As a matter of fact, you know, that might be a thing for you to do. You should go back and look at that ISS fraud footage that I did on YouTube, the clip I did for YouTube, and just grab it and isolate out. It's such a good example. Or go find the original clip. It's not hard. I forget what the supposed astronaut's name is. But you totally get the sense that it is an airplane jet engine and that it is revving at certain points.
Well, if it's going up and down, if it's modulating like that, then that is obviously machinery doing something, or it's a Doppler effect.
Well, in that one clip, as I've mentioned so many times, what struck me and what got me to do the clip is I'm a video editor, and I know how easy it is to do shenanigans with video and really change what the viewer thinks they are looking at. Even simple things like changing the speed. Every time I ever edit video for YouTube, I always tell people, okay, this is at 50% speed, or I added contrast or brightness. I try to tell every time because it really can change the impression. What I noticed in that clip is that they were playing it off as if it was a continuous shot. And the first thing I noticed is that there were these sneaky cuts with a light flash being put over them and an audio soundtrack to lead your mind away from the fact that there was a cut going on. But the funny thing was, is that I noticed where the cut was, all of a sudden pop up a little bottle would be there that wasn't there right before the cut. It wasn't even that well done. And there's no reason for these types of shenanigans to go on. But anyhow, let's keep moving here, Jason.
Sure. Now, one of the really big, probably one of the biggest, occurred on July 16th, 2013, when nearly a gallon of cold water flooded the spacesuit helmet of an astronaut during an EVA within a few seconds, nearly drowning him. At the time, NASA had no explanation for the incident, although it was later said to be a leak of the suit's water cooling system. They've now introduced snorkels in each of the helmets on the space station to help combat this problem should it occur in any future endeavor while using those same suits. Now, seems really messed up to me.
I mean, it almost seems like a few things are going on here. It almost seems like the, whatever it is, the third law of alchemy, temporarily, you know, tipping your hand and letting be visible what was previously not, you know, maybe the idea of space is water. But, you know, water leaks into a guy's helmet, supposedly. He almost drowns and they have no explanation. Well, I've got an explanation. He was in a pool. There's the simplest explanation. If I'm wrong, NASA, tell me why I'm wrong. But until you can do that, that is the simplest explanation.
Well, they also stated very distinctly that it was cold water. I don't know if there indeed there's a water coolant system, would that water stay cold? Or would it be warm from heat transfer? I don't know. Maybe someone else can answer that. But it was weird that they blatantly stated that it was cold water.
Yeah, I guess to play it off as the cooling system. I don't even know where to go with this, but I would also point out, having lived in San Diego, I've known so many pools in my life. It costs a lot of money to heat a pool. So when you're looking at a pool the size of this pool that houses part of the ISS mock-up, that'd be a heck of a bill to heat, you know, constantly heat a pool like that. But not only that, if you were filming in it, heat in the water would give you that oasis effect at times. So I would imagine if you wanted to film in a crystal clear pool where you've ionized it or however they keep it so clear, you would want it to be cool so that the filming would be better.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Next up, we have a clip called Cupola First Light in HD. Is the actual official name of it that's floating around. You can go watch it yourself. And that's one of the modules that has seven windows in it. But it looks like, when they're showing in this particular clip, bubbles going by the outside of the windows. I mean, I guess it could be written off as particles, but sure as hell looks like air bubbles to me.
Well, I saw some YouTuber, I forgot who, they covered the Cupola or the viewing platform, whatever. But the funny thing was, they had all this HD video and not once did they show you what you could see through these supposed windows. But I'll have to go look at that, Jason. If it's another bubble enigma, you know, I guess someone ought to post that video and get it out there.
And that's another one another feather in the hat of, guys, why are you not sticking an iPhone out the window and so everyone goes, holy shit. I mean, come on. That's ridiculous, you know?
Well, there it is. Any reasonable person who was actually in space, who actually had free time and a camera, which clearly they do. They got plenty of free time up there. They're playing keyboards and guitars and doing interviews left and right and Skyping with Susan Sarandon, of course, because Hollywood is never more than a stone's throw from NASA. Any reasonable person would point that camera out the window and show what few Earth-based telescopes could even approach, because there's no atmosphere, we are told. You looked at, you know, Saturn or Jupiter or Mars or the Orion Nebula or any of the things that I have pointed my scope at would be many hundreds time better view simply because you're outside the atmosphere, we are told.
Yeah, the Cupola window module thing, it kind of reminded me of the Millennium Falcon cockpit.
Right.
So, I mean, and if you think back to Star Wars, like, that's really open is what I'm getting at. Like, the whole point behind that design is that it's supposed to be secure, but there's so much window space you can look around and get a very good sight of what's around you. Come on, guys, show it to us, you know?
Exactly. So here's this Cupola that's supposed to be like this big 360 viewing port, but no one gets to view anything. And I would also point out, what about all these supposed micrometeorites? I mean, is that bulletproof glass? What do you got going on there? And even if it was bulletproof glass, the description of micrometeorites we have been handed at times would make a bullet look like it was traveling in reverse, just about the way that they're saying the speeds of these things and how dangerous they are. None of it holds water, man. None of it.
Right. And speaking of the Cupola windows, there's a video that shows a walk through the station and the person goes into Node 3 and it has a cutscene. You know, there's an edit. After the edit, a blue light is all of a sudden on right in front of you. And perhaps that's to simulate the light of the Earth coming through the seven windows of the Cupola module. It reminded me of the unedited reel of the Apollo footage that Bart Sobral got where they were look like they were setting up shots and things like that to be cut later. It just reminded me of more of that kind of thing, you know?
Right. It's one of those things where you don't need to examine it. You just look at it and you understand the ring of truth is not there and you label it what it is. It's fraud. We've talked about this before. If a new model of truck comes out in the world, you can go look up what colors it comes in, how many horsepower it has, all these things about the truck. And there's no mystery to it. There's no arguable points to it because the truck is a real thing. People can look at the real thing and write down what they know about the real thing. They can take a picture of this real thing and all this information. And even though there may be a mistake here or there, overall, there is no mystery. There's no Sherlock Holmes thing to hook people into. It's simply data about a thing that exists. And this is one good measurement you can take when you look at video like this, because if you just turn off your critical, you know, detail monitor and take in the video and just ask yourself, is the ring of truth here? you're going to find that quite often, actually most of the time with the ISS, there is no ring of truth in what you're being presented with. And not only that, it opens up all these mysteries. And again, you know, I've almost done clips now to posit the idea that whenever mainstream sources provide a mystery, you're looking at nonsense. It's almost like mystery was invented for the nonsense that the mainstream media kicks out to us. That little hook that hooks so many people. I've got to know more. Well, why isn't this right? Well, how can that be? Oh, well, that's interesting. You know, these things that pull your mind away from your higher self that would easily recognize the fraud. But anyhow.
Well, what's interesting about all of this, and again, there's other video shots from inside the station that are supposed to be continuous that have blatant signs of editing going from module to module.
Right.
What I don't understand is if they've got the kind of budgets that they're supposed to be given every year, how are they not doing this better? Like, it should be seamless and flawless. It should look like a major Hollywood production because they've got more money than that.
Well, you know, that's another thing that's always got me, too. Let's think back a short while ago to when they produced or released the movie Gravity with, who was it, George Clooney and
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock. I didn't watch the whole thing because it was just a bit too much for me. But what I did watch left me understanding one thing. If you were a person who never knew there was a thing called Hollywood, who believe fervently that there's a thing called space in the way it's been described, and you were shown that movie, you would never be able to tell. You would be thinking the whole time this must have been shot in space. If you were told that, you would believe it is that good. I mean, it is beyond that good. It is amazing.
It looks better than reality.
Right. I mean, it is so over the top well done. And then here we come back to NASA with these cheesy cuts and things blinking on screen and green screens failing in the background, people being suspended from cables, people being hung upside down, people on vomit comets to simulate zero G, all this nonsense going on in the videos. And yet we have footage of a supposed astronaut up in space Skyping with Susan Sarandon in Hollywood. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, why doesn't Hollywood step up and, you know, make the footage so good that it would be difficult to take apart?
It should be able to be done. And these inconsistencies we're seeing, it's just hard to write them off. And, you know, maybe this lends more credence to the Kubrick theory for Apollo, because they knew they had to get that one so good, for the time at least, that people couldn't tear it apart until we got into the information age, you know?
Yeah, and it comes back to this kind of spellcasting that I talked about in 9/11. I am convinced that the 9/11 ritual is intended to be discovered. And it's not only intended to be discovered, but it's intended to be discovered in certain ways. In other words, this part of it is supposed to be discovered first, next, next, next. And it completes this spell of power that these people did, because now all these people have discovered what 9/11 was, and yet nothing has been done about it, giving them almost implicit permission to have done what they did. Now, when we look at the crappy video that constantly comes from the supposed ISS that so many people rip to shreds, I mean, not really arguably, just clearly demonstrating that there is something wrong with this video, you have to ask, why aren't they doing it better? And I almost wonder if it's a similar thing where the lie is so immense that we have been told about space, that we've been told about the Apollo missions, that we've been told about anything about space, that they're almost doing a sloppy job so that the people that are accepting it, they can basically say those stupid monkeys should have been smart enough to understand what was going on here, and yet they couldn't, so they get what they deserve, or something along those lines. It's really hard to describe, but I hope you see what I'm getting at here.
Well, but Neil deGrasse Tyson gets on lots and lots and lots of television and radio programs and says you're an idiot.
Well, Neil my ass Tyson, I would not trade positions with for love or money. He's a silly man, and he's defending things that are reaching the point of indefensibleness. And even if people want to set aside what space may be still, I understand. Even if they want to set aside things like the ISS, I kind of understand. You look at it, you'll be feeling less optimistic about its reality. But the Apollo moonshot, no. I'm sorry. The Apollo moonshot is not one of these gray area things. It just isn't. Any person who has a brain who begins to methodically go at what we've been handed can instantly understand it is fraud. And yet we have this man, Neil Myas Tyson, constantly defending it. So again, the ring of truth is not in that man. He is a defender, an agent of the system, and he has no concern for the average person on this world.
Well, I brought him up because I saw a clip of him mixed in with the ISS stuff last night when I was watching these, where he said you could do calculations of the amount of fuel in the Saturn V rocket and it's enough to get to the moon and back. And I was like, not according to Wernher von Braun.
Not just Wernher von Braun. I mean, we did it in the last episode. Even the PhDs over at Aulis.com that went at it, and then independent people who did fact-checking on what was presented about the capability of the Saturn rockets, all three of those sources we just mentioned all said that the Saturn rocket's capability was extremely overstated, not even in the same ballpark.
It seems like he's out there for damage control, to be honest with you, because he is well-spoken, he's charismatic, he's a good-looking dude. You know, he seems like he's just a figurehead. He's out there to do exactly what it is he's doing.
Well, I mean, look at his job. You know, he's the head of the planetarium there in New York City, and he was instrumental in the whole Pluto nonsense. So you and I grow up in this world with nine planets. A lot of people tried to demonstrate who are into astrology in one way or another. And I want to preface this. Whether or not you believe in astrology, you can pretty much show that the elites encode things all the time with astrology. And it mostly has to do with the zodiacal signs and the sun and the moon and the planets. It's done all the time. Regardless of what you think about it, it has been demonstrated verbatim, even in the 9/11 ritual, that this is going on. So a bunch of people after 9/11 who, I guess, look at astrology in a typical way, as you would expect an astrologer to look at it, we're saying that Pluto was heavily influencing this whole thing. In other words, if you were to look at the sky during 9/11, there would be no getting away from Pluto and in this whole kind of ritualistic thing they were doing. Anyhow, we get beyond that, and here comes Neil deGrasse Tyson to help demote Pluto to a dwarf planet. Excuse me. And I did clips on this. He even goes, does a TV show where he goes to the hometown of the man who discovered it, who we're told was some janitor who worked and worked and worked. I forget the whole story about the guy who discovered Pluto. If I'm not mistaken, I hope I don't get this wrong, I think it's the telescope I looked through where Percival Lowell was. I think that's the in Flagstaff there. That, I hope I've got that right. If not, I apologize. But anyhow, pulling from memory. So he goes out and helps demote this planet. When I began to look at the language all around the demotion of Pluto, it was clearly more nonsense, where the ring of truth was a million miles away. But what really struck me is at the time I was looking at the names of planets. All planets are named for mythical things that don't exist to start with, except our moon. And while people could argue that there is a name for our moon like Lunar or something like this, the truth is we call it the moon. Yet every other moon has a name. In the same way, Earth basically means dirt. But not to sidestep too far here, I was looking at the idea of all these orbital model elements all being named after mythical, non-existent, fantasy-based things. During the demotion of Pluto, one of the excuses they used for the demotion was there was these two other Kuiper Belt objects. For those who don't know what NASA claims the Kuiper Belt is, it's like this outer ring beyond Pluto of crap floating around in a big circle in their orbital model that doesn't exist. But these two objects were bigger than Pluto, and this is where the door slammed shut for me. One of the objects was named Easter Bunny, and the other object was named Santa. So I made a clip at the time when I was talking about the Pluto nonsense that was going on. And I asked, are we doing serious things here? Is research in space and the naming of these massive objects that are so many millions of miles away from us, is that a serious endeavor? Because if it is, my contention would be they don't get named Easter Bunny. They don't get named Santa Claus. And that's just another poke in the eye. But anyhow, Jason, back to you.
Yeah, you're totally right about all that, man. On to our inconsistencies. Two astronauts who had been interviewed on camera at different times completely contradict each other as to what it is they do with their used toothpaste. The lady said you swallow it, and then the Russian guy just said you use a towel, and even showed that on camera. So well, in this tiny little environment that's so small that they're interacting with each other, they're getting things wrong.
Well, I hope the guy who swallows isn't using Colgate, because if he is, he needs to read the poison warning on toothpaste.
If more than a pea-size amount is swallowed, call poison control immediately.
And you know why? Because there's fluoride in it, and yep. Fluoride is poison.
Yep.
Anyhow, that kind of on the face of it shows you what you're looking at. The ring of truth is not there, is it?
Mm-mm. Nope. We've already mentioned this briefly. There are scenes where it looks like astronauts are wearing harnesses and hooks, just like you would in a Superman movie or some such. and some of their movements really seem consistent with such, and then they're just doing what you do in the movies. You edit it out with, you know, you'd be standing in front of a green screen, and then they chroma key it out in some way, shape, or form. And this technology has been around for decades as far as Hollywood is concerned. That's when you see people hanging from helicopters or doing some amazing thing. Gravity is just a more modern one where they did a hell of a job just making everything look incredible. But The Matrix, all those amazing fight scenes, that's how all those were done. You can't see any freaking wires. I mean, that stuff is nearly flawless. That movie blew people's minds when it came out. It looks so damn good.
That's right. It's the Hong Kong Kung Fu wire system, isn't it? That's where that was really pioneered, I believe, the use of wire in that way. But let's remember back to Apollo, where it's been pretty much demonstrated that some of the falling astronaut footage was standing back up, the weights being removed by a wire system. And there are some images where supposedly we can see the wires, but it's tougher to make a provable case for that. But I would also point out, we do have footage that we're told is being filmed in the ISS that we can pretty much demonstrate was shot in front of a blue screen or a green screen, because we can see the anomalies that go on when the chroma key isn't perfect.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Chroma key really isn't perfect, especially if you try and do it quickly. If you try and do it in live time, it's not perfect. CNN does it a lot, and it's very noticeable. Kind of looks like old Doctor Who, where you can see the edges and stuff like that. And here's the thing. Hollywood isn't doing it in live time. The reason why Hollywood movies look so damn good is because they can take it frame by frame, and any inconsistencies can be digitally edited out. So Gravity looks phenomenal and perfect because they're taking the time to do so. If you're doing something in live time, you're kind of at the mercy of a lot of things, really, you know, that make sure the computer didn't do a calculation that took it away for a second, and you see someone's nose disappear or something like that. But to back that up, there is a scene that I watched where an astronaut's arm disappears while going around a corner. And that is very indicative of image layering and green screen techniques, because that's, the chroma key didn't do it quite right.
So people understand how chroma key works is like this. Usually they use a blue or a green screen behind a foreground image that they want to keep, and then they punch out the green screen behind and add a new background, basically. The way it works is the reason the green looks so artificial is because they need a color that doesn't match any skin tone or any of the clothing or any of the things they want to stay in the image. And when chroma key goes wrong, typically what has happened is when the green from the green screen or the blue screen is being punched out, it was too close to one of the foreground colors. So like if an arm disappears, it's just the chroma key taking too much away. I hope people understand.
Yeah, you explained that right. Basically what it is the computer, it's a color it's like a lime green if no one's ever seen it, but you probably have. Most people have seen some sort of behind the scenes of a movie or TV show. It's a very, like, very disgusting lime green that almost nobody would ever wear or have on them. And what you do is you tell – and I've used software that does this. This is how I know this so well. You tell the computer that color, remove it 100%.
Right. And since no color is 100% pure, you usually have to make adjustments, but it's gotten much better. So they'd use lighting. Like if you had a supposed astronaut in the foreground, you could use lighting to ensure that he's very well lit and that there's no color in his image that you want to keep that's even close to the blue or the green that you're going to punch out. But anyhow.
Yeah, well, the lighting consistency is the thing. If something is very well lit, it means that the color the computer's looking for is going to be more consistent across the whole spectrum, because the light is making sure that the thing is well lit and there's no shadows or things that it could misconstrue.
That's right. And you could also tint the color of light that is lighting the people you want to keep, to ensure that there are no greens that will get bled into the chroma key and removed. But there's more than one image or more than one video of people turning a corner and part of their body being chroma keyed out, or as you pointed out, an arm disappearing. But anyhow, Jason, that takes us to the top of the hour. Do you want to add anything in before we take the break and come back for the second hour?
There's a whole lot more we're going to get at. I'm going to leave folks with this last fact just to kind of hook them in for the rest. I went back and looked at Skylab stuff, and the Skylab module rooms seem to have been much larger than any of this stuff, and this was in the very early 70s. This is like just immediately after Apollo technology, and there's this giant room that the astronauts are floating around in and all that, and is this another case of technology going backwards again, decades after huge accomplishments have already been made?
And to top it, I'll have to go look at that, Jason, because that rings a bell with me. I was looking at Skylab when I was pricing out. You know, they were making the argument that Skylab and the space shuttles would be much cheaper, which, of course, they were many times more expensive. But I looked up the mission statements for Skylab, where one of the main purposes was to do all this amazing science. And for the life of me, I looked and looked. I didn't find any amazing science that came out of Skylab. And again, you know, it's the absence of the ring of truth here.
Yeah. So check that one out as well, folks. Go look at the Skylab pictures, then look at the tiny little rooms that you're seeing on the ISS. And maybe that's because it's modular. You know, I always try and look at both sides of the argument. It's modular. It's sent up in pieces. Okay, maybe, but I don't know. I still think they could do better.
You think? Let's go back to the wonderful world of Disney on Sunday nights in black and white and look at all the amazing space things we're supposed to have in the near future, which we never saw. But anyhow, that brings this part of episode 41 on the International Space Station to a close. When we come back, we're going to cover just a litany of things, from live stream videos people can look up, just an endless list of things that people can go examine if they still are interested in challenging what is called the International Space Station. So there it is. Cheers. All right, man. Welcome back to Hour 2 of Crow 777 Radio, Episode 41, where we are ripping the guts out of the International Space Station, which is ISS, which is another way to encode 911. Incidentally, as a side note, I was looking at other things that are encoded with 911. The way to say king in Latin is rex. The word rex encodes 911. I don't know whether this coded system has always existed here or whether the people that run this joint invented it, but whenever you can derive 911 from a thing, it's there to show you something. It's there to show you the construct of this place that we live. But anyhow, let's jump right back in. We have so much to cover, Jason, and there's it's a smorgasbord of bullet points we have for people here that can go look at the videos, go look at each thing that we talk about, and challenge it for their own peace of mind so they can come to their own conclusion here.
And what people need to realize that by the time we get done with this episode, we will have done 8+ hours of inconsistencies of the space program from day one, what's been shown to us. And this is what I always stress. Who knows what's really going on? But this is what's given to us in the public. This is what they say, and not just the United States, you know, also the Soviet Union and some European agencies now getting into the game.
I would point out, Jason, if you and I decided we wanted to do a show on some model of vehicle and we wanted to point out the inconsistencies, could we even put together a single 2-hour show? I don't think we could, because the vehicle actually exists. You see, it's this whole idea of making up a construct, and I've said it so many times. There is no person who can make a lie a true thing. There is no person that can make a true thing a lie. And that is the basis for what we are doing here. So anyhow, I kind of stepped on you there.
No, and that's cool. And this goes back to what I said in hour one, that if they're going to be faking this stuff, you think they'd at least do a better job. But, you know, I don't know. It's very confusing. If you're going to do something, do it right. But they're not even doing that.
Yeah, it's so much of the stuff we pull apart has this thumbprint on it. It's almost like they're going to set a bear trap for the minds of everyone in the world, but they can't completely hide the bear trap, because if they do that, then they're blindsiding everyone. Everyone caught in the bear trap never had a chance. They couldn't see it. They couldn't detect it. They stepped on it. Whack. They're stuck in the trap. And so maybe there's karma or whatever it is, their Talmudic law rules. There's a lot of in the Talmudic law that makes me really think this is a true thing, where they have to at least give the opportunity for anyone with a brain to understand they're not being told the truth and they should not be following this. I think there's some of that in all of these things we rip apart.
Yeah, there's the whole stated thing that the elite follow this code of karma, where they have to tell you what they're doing. And even though they do it in bizarre ways, like encoding 9/11 and The Simpsons and all that kind of stuff, there's right. so much of it that there does seem to be some sort of validity to it. And maybe the space programs are just another example of that. They make it look just good enough that at a casual glance, you'd fall for it. But as soon as you start doing what we're doing, and I'm sure we haven't even gotten half of it, it falls apart. So I don't know. And that's what we see.
And here's a prime example. You know, so many people are familiar with that one shot from The Simpsons pre-echoing 9/11, where Bart's holding a flyer where it says 9/11 on it, and it's clearly a reference to the coming buildings being leveled. People need to get away from mystery, because what happens is now after the fact, we go back and see Simpsons, Family Guy, any number of places were pre-echoing 9/11. As a matter of fact, the whole Back to the Future series is pre-echoing 9/11. So they get caught up in this mystery mind. And what they should be doing is saying, wait a minute, somebody knew before the fact. What the heck more do you need to know? You see, but that's not what happens, because people's minds have been primed into this mystery mindset where common sense gets set aside because there's this mystery that needs to be picked apart, that the details have to be, you know, tricked and cajoled to get these little details out of this mystery. I would point out this is exactly how the Loch Ness Monster works, because people got wrapped up in the mystery trap. There is no damn Loch Ness Monster. Bigfoot is no better. In the age of cameras everywhere, how would it be possible for some massive land animal to be existing? And yet the mystery of it, they even have television shows where they name hunting Bigfoot. And then after that season's over, they say further evidence for Bigfoot. And then they come back with another episode that's called Finding Bigfoot. Well, they never find Bigfoot.
No.
And you can see the mental trap that mystery is. It takes an adult human being and it pulls them away from their common sense mind so that they can nitpick at this mystery and get all caught up in the spider web. So anyhow, I'll kick it to you, Jason.
Well, it's funny about what Ida said, and I've never liked Bigfoot. That's just always felt like a bunch of nonsense to me. A lot of these programs, they'll just call it all conspiracy. It's like, we'll put Bigfoot with UFOs with the Federal Reserve. And it's just like, well, wait a second. Those are three entirely different things, you know? And it's like you're lumping it all into one, this is crazy, but let's look at it, you know?
But it's got the common thread. It's a mystery, you know? There's this hook waiting to snag your mind called mystery. And it just does not serve us well. You know, you can imagine people in some part of the world where they don't have media and they live off the land. You know, even if we're told about people back in the 1400s or something that lived off the land, we're told all this nonsense, like they believed in dragons, they believed in all these things. I would submit BS. They lived on the land. Not only did they understand exactly what was in their environment, they were very in sync with it. They knew how to live within it without disturbing their environment. They knew everything about the sun and the moon and what it meant about the seasons. They knew all these things, and yet were constantly convinced that these people eating organic food died when they were 30. They believed in all these nonsensical things, and I would submit to you that you're looking at de-evolution. We're being convinced that the human mind is something less than it is, and one of the big tools here is mystery.
Well, there's one way you can wrap all that up. There's something that they didn't have that we now have in the modern age in abundance, and that is distraction.
There it is, man. I mean, there it is. If you had to live by your wits and you had to be in tune, you had to know when to plant, you had to know how to hunt, what was huntable, all these things, think about the mindset of a person like that. They would be a serious person. They would be a well-informed person. They would know things that would probably be amazing to most of us now because we don't have that experience of being in one with our environment. So, I mean, you nailed it on the head there, Jason. We are the most entertained nation in the world. And I would point out again, for those who haven't caught it before, if you take apart the word entertainment, what you find is it means to go in and hold your mind.
And there it is. And speaking of that, back to the inconsistencies with the ISS, there are multiple scenes where it seems to show that the zero genus seems to change or be at different strengths or levels. Sometimes the astronauts seem to be able to hold on to things to stabilize themselves, and other times it seems like there's no need. They're just kind of hanging there. Now, maybe that could be written off as movement. I don't know. I've never been to space, but definitely was very noticeable from video to video.
Yeah, I've noticed this too, but clearly it's just about how fat they are. You know, some guys have more mass, so gravity's pulling them down harder. I don't even, you know, come on. It's another one of those things where when you stop accepting what you're being shown and stop letting a piece of video entertain you and pull you into the idea that they're actually in space and you say, no, wait a minute, I'm an adult human being. I have a higher mind. I can look at the details here. I understand that the devil is in the details and that the details will destroy every lie ever told. If you do that switch over, you'll be able to recognize what Jason is pointing out here because, I mean, I've even seen clips pointing out what's wrong with the zero genus, as Jason put it.
Let's see. There are exterior shots of the ISS that don't match up with what can be seen from different vantage points, whether inside or outside. One in particular that stood out to me was a solar panel that didn't look the same as it should have in different shots. It was like part of it was missing or something. Could have been an angle thing. I'm always trying to be objective. Didn't look like it to me, but, you know, I'm not a complete expert on this.
Well, this is a good way to go at things when you have a lot of imagery to start to compare. Because again, you can't make a lie a true thing. No matter how hard a human being tries to fool you, they're going to make mistakes. And it's just not possible to cover every base. As a matter of fact, not too long ago, there was a video making the rounds when they had announced some kind of a new hatch door on the outside of the ISS, and it looked like it was this flimsy, made out of Reynolds wrap door, and I'm sure people could still go look this up. I mean, it's nonsensical. So we have a ton of video we can compare, and I think what you just did right there, Jason, is an excellent way for people to begin to understand the fraud that is the ISS simply by comparing one piece of footage to another.
Yeah, and there is a lot of footage available because they have a live stream, and I went on it multiple times yesterday. It was never consistently on, and the reason they give is that the ISS would be on the night side of the planet at any given time. Which to me, I would think, and you're more of a camera guy than me, wouldn't you just see the lights of the cities below you?
Well, of course you would, because they have handed out a poster that is named something to the effect the United States from space at night, and it shows all the big city centers lit up. So you're pointing out one of the arguments that I've used for so many people who want to come claim this live feed thing is real. There are never any lights in the darkened portion. But not only that, there's quite a bit of video clips on YouTube of people who have pointed out how often the feed that they're showing you is always over the ocean, like 80% of the time. I don't know if that's changed. Just a couple of years ago when people were really taking apart the perspective, how clouds in the distance didn't appear to move quicker as they got towards you with the gaps widening between them, which are laws of perspective. These are not arguable points. Anyone who's been to an art class understands this is the perspective that we experience in this 3D environment. But again, two points here. The perspective was never right, and there's never any city lights in so much of this video where people come to my channel and say, oh, how can you say this is not real when there's this live stream? And I say, well, look at the night shot of Earth. There's no city lights anywhere. And then all these excuses start to be made up. But anyhow.
Well, what's interesting is there's multiple cameras, and one of them at least has a 720p option. So, of course, I clicked that on. And I let it load for a moment, make sure it was buffering properly. But the picture still looked grainy and pixelated to me. And, you know, I have an iMac, a slightly older one, but still really nice screen. So I can definitely see details on this thing. And just, it didn't look the way it should. Like, why is it not at 720p? I know what 720p looks like. I know what 1080p looks like. I know what 5K looks like. And it just, I don't know.
Well, that's a simple thing to address. Let's use Occam's razor. If we get HD crisp footage, there is value in learning something from it. If you get crappy footage like Neil Armstrong walking on the moon, which was supposedly filmed off a monitor at very low resolution, what you actually get is near worthlessness. And I think that's the simple answer here. But of course, if you have a live feed and people can get the video all the time, you could make the claim that this is original Premiere video. Even though you've taken a copy down, the point is, hasn't been manipulated. You know the source because you just took it down from the live feed. When you take video like that apart, it becomes very hard to do damage control when people find major flaws in it.
Yeah. Well, of course, once again, the Earth doesn't look quite the same as it has before. So the ghost of space footage past comes to haunt again.
Well, no. One more thing I would mention here, Jason, is, you know, we mentioned the speed at which this light they're claiming is a space station is traveling. For my money, every time I have seen these supposed shots looking down from what we're told is a 17,500 mile an hour orbit, things are moving in slow motion. How can that be?
Maybe because of the size of the object in relation to the Earth's rotation. I'm not really sure. The Earth's rotation is definitely not insanely fast in the current footage, which is definitely noticeable compared to the early stuff of the 60s that I was watching. Like the first one, the first spacewalk, the Russian one, the Earth seemed to be turning awfully fast. And,
right.
You know, and this, like, again, I always try to be objective about this. This could have to do with the Earth's real rotation versus the speed that the capsule that's orbiting is going, and I'm sure there's a ratio to that. I don't know. It just doesn't look right, though, you know? You think there would be certain, like, consistent ways the clouds would look or things like that, you know?
And there are clips on YouTube people can look up of footage, legitimate footage from a plane roughly at 70,000 feet, maybe a little higher, I'm not sure. And it's very clear that the difference between what a plane is shooting at roughly 70,000 feet looks so close to what is being passed off as international space footage, when you would think, wait a minute, 70,000 feet, these guys are 260 miles up. Wouldn't there really be a noticeable difference? But that's another thing you can compare.
Sure, yeah. And that's exactly what we need to keep doing, is comparing what we know to be reality, which would be in a plane, compared to what they're presenting to us. And if there's things that are and aren't right that compare, then we know there's a problem.
That's right.
Some people theorize that there should be so much space junk whipping around the Earth at this point that the ISS would literally be a death trap, with at least micropunctures occurring on a regular basis. There appears to be no airlocks, or very few, at least between some of the modules, which means in the event of a pressure loss, the whole thing would just become one big problem. Like, you'd be dead. The pressure would immediately go out of it.
So let's make a prediction here based on this bullet point, Jason. This is the premise for the movie Gravity. You've got to wonder if it is possible, and I think it's possible, who knows if it's true, that gravity is pre-echoing how they're going to end their lie that they've got to maintain called the International Space Station. But there are other types. People can look this up. There are these other things that they were making that look like satellites with big wings, but they have like gelatin on the wings. And we are told they were going to be put up there to collect these micrometeors, and they show what it looks like. Well, what I would say is, so really, you can make this little object and put it up there, and sure is, you know, God created little green apples, there's going to be little micrometeorites hitting it. Well, why aren't they hitting everything? And again, not too long ago, I was looking at a mathematician who did some very high-end math that took into account the supposed number of satellites and, you know, set aside even the space junk, which is massive numbers if you want to believe it. And he calculated something like we should see 100 transits over the moon every 1 to 3 hours. I've forgotten the exact numbers. So again, none of this stuff holds up, just none of it. And when we have a major motion picture, which was one of the big pictures of the year it came out, using the idea of flying space debris, destroying space stations, and not just ours, in the movie there are three or four space stations that get destroyed. I would ask, I mean, are we looking at another pre-Echo event here?
Right. In one video of a supposed EVA, a person in scuba gear can be seen in the airlock door while the camera is showing the astronaut working on the outside of the ISS.
And there it is. I've seen that footage. And you've got to wonder. It brings us back to the idea of temporarily tipping your hand, not being able to totally blindside people. How is it that video like this can exist and more people are not just calling poppycock on the whole thing? And how is it that a place like a space agency could ever release a piece of footage like that?
Yeah. And how didn't it get caught? Like that's what jumped out of my mind. Like, you can clearly see it. I mean, clearly.
Right.
There's no doubt whatsoever about what you're seeing. Now, if this pool that they have the ISS mock-up in is as crystal clear as they put out, that's fine. You could easily get away with letting that be a representation of, hey, we're in space. But you didn't edit that footage. You didn't take a look at it. Like, what's going on here? That one really got me.
I think it's the third law of alchemy here. I think they're temporarily temping their hand.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't understand how it gets released otherwise. I mean, people have to see this before it goes out to the public.
Well, and this is with all of this stuff. Is there one master controller? Is there like a producer over the production of what gets released and checking everything? Like, what's your editor doing? How are these things slipping by? And it seems weird that the whole thing would be sloppily done.
No, it seems like it would have to be intentional. And I know people would make the argument that there's some good guy on the inside that's trying to show the truth, but it doesn't really matter. We have the footage and we know what they claim they're showing. They're claiming they're showing an EVA in outer space. And in fact, what they're showing is footage from inside a pool. When you get lied to on that scale, you should immediately understand what your source is and never trust another thing from that source.
Yep. Now, next point may actually be nothing, but this is just something that caught my eye. I haven't seen anybody else put a video out about this, but being an audio guy, and I'm very familiar with audio gear, I noticed that in some videos, the astronauts would be holding what looks like a wireless Sennheiser EA35 microphone. The reason why I can recognize this is because the basket that's around the diaphragm has a very distinctive look. In other videos, I see them holding a Shure SM58 style with a cord going to the wall. Just as a thought, I would think that these things would have to be tested out ahead of time, settled upon what they're going to use, and contracted out to a specific company so money isn't being spent in multiple places. Because both those companies have distinctive looks to their microphones and wouldn't produce something that looked like each other's.
You know, that's an interesting comment to me, Jason, because it's another avenue someone could go down. Because as you point out, when you're dealing with a space agency, we're told almost everything is contracted out to people who can handle it, which means the audiovisual must be being contracted out. If that is true, we should be able to look up who is being contracted to deal with the audio video. And I've never really thought about this before, but that is an interesting point to me.
I would like to know more about the cameras as well. They do use multiple. They say there's four cameras on the outside and then whatever they're using on the inside. And some of the stuff on the outside, I am guessing, are GoPros because of the look of the quality of the images. GoPros, as far as buying one retail, automatically come with a fisheye lens, which is why they're worthless if you're trying to get any kind of empirical data about an object.
Right.
A lot of people launch them on weather balloons. And, yeah, they do take good images, but they are not made to get empirical data. They are made for action shots. The fisheye lens is so that it can capture as much of the scene as possible so that if you're going skydiving or if you're climbing a mountain or you're on stage, they put them on the bands and stuff like that so they can capture as much of a wide field of view as possible. So trying to use it to, hey, let's look at the curvature of the Earth or something like that, no way. Absolutely worthless data.
Right, it is. I hate fisheye lenses. I don't see any value in fisheye lenses in the modern age. Anything shot with a fisheye lens, in my view, is just eye candy with no real value beyond that.
Yeah, and that's what a GoPro is marketed as. They're actually not very expensive. A couple hundred dollars will get you, in the modern ones are up to 4K. So
I think you can switch the lenses out on them, but there's a cost there. But you got to wonder if they, you know, you got to wonder if the people at GoPro knew they were going to be putting them up on, you know, high-altitude weather balloons, so they did that on purpose. Hard to know. Well, I guess when you think about their use, it does make sense, because if you're strapping it to your helmet or the front of a motorcycle, clearly a fisheye will pull more in. But, you know, that's basically the value of that video is based on something exciting happening, and that's not really empirically valuable.
Well, that's the other exciting part about the GoPro, is that they revolutionized the image stabilization techniques, so that when you're moving super quick, it will keep everything static. But if you look at a GoPro image compared to like something I shot with my Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera, which is going for filmic quality, you know, quality of the image. The thing is trying to capture as much data as possible to look as amazing as possible so you can grade it and give it the look you want. They look entirely different.
That's right. And, you know, I have DSLRs, three very good DSLRs. And whenever you're shooting chem planes, you're always concerned that you can't do it handheld or it'll get blurry. And, you know, if you were holding a GoPro, it wouldn't be the same problem. Problem is you wouldn't have the same quality of image. But you got to wonder when the DSLRs are going to catch up so that you could do handheld shots and still have some image stability.
Yeah, and those are getting better all the time as well. Like, I can definitely tell with my new iPhone, much better than the older stuff. Like when I shot my daughter ice skating on my new iPhone, it was super tight and crisp, and she was moving around on a skating rink. You know, it just looked way smoother than I had two generations older. So it's getting there. But the thing is, you can see a difference when comparing this footage with, say, what a film camera is supposed to look like.
Right. And I'll tell you what, you know, so many people are always asking when I'm going to be filming again. As many people know, I had to come out to the East Coast to take care of a family member. My field of view is a bit reduced here, but I am working with a friend of mine who just got a 2K camera and a very big scope. And we're going to be working on producing even better footage at some point, hopefully in spring. The reason I mention this is because, yeah, I mean, we're getting up into 4K video. Canon has already released a 50 megapixel camera. 4K, for people who don't know, is 4,000 some pixels wide, where typical HD is 1920 wide. So that's more than double, I think, right around double anyhow, without the numbers right in front of me. At the quality of video like this, when we begin to film things like anomalies with the sun or the moon, I mean, we're going to get to a point where we have staggering quality.
Well, and just so I understand this and everyone listening understands it, when you're filming something, let's say at 50 megapixels, that means that you can keep blowing it up and blowing it up and blowing it up, and there's enough data there that you can really zoom in and it's still going to be a sharp image with discernible objects in it, right?
Right. And so when I took the jump, I had a DSLR that was an EOS Rebel T2i, I think, had 16 megapixels. That was what I filmed the lunar wave with. And you can see the quality is not what I shot with later. Then I got my Nikon, which has 36 megapixels. So I jumped from 16 to 36. And that was around the top of the game for cameras that people could afford to buy. 50 megapixels was not yet out. And it does mean that. I got a camera that didn't dither pixels. So when I shot these black objects going across the moon, I could zoom in on them. But there is a limit. It will pixelate. But when you couple 20 or 30 megapixels with 4K resolution, you've got to realize, if you took a 4K video of an object transiting the moon and put it in a 1920 HD window, you're already going to be 50% or more pulled in. And that may not be exactly right, but you're going to be already zoomed way in. Now you've got your other 20 or 30 megapixels to zoom further in. And that's only half the story, because when you're zoomed out, it is so staggeringly sharp and clear, you begin to get a lot more sense of what's going on. And this is all a very big deal. So as we get up into these big 14-inch scopes and 2K cameras, and all the people who have gotten interested in telescopes from the work that I've done and others have done, I mean, there's a day coming. I would predict there is a day coming. And I've said it a lot of times on this show. It's going to be about the sun, I think. The moon's a big deal. The moon's got a lot to tell us. The moon is maybe a control center of this construct. I don't know for sure. But the sun, there's something going on there, man.
There's something else I learned about when I've been getting into cameras and all that, and that's the compression rate. I own a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera, and you can shoot in ProRes or in RAW. And RAW is
uncompressed.
Yeah, it's pretty much about as uncompressed as you can get, which means that as much data as that lens can, or not the lens, the what do you call it, the sensor can capture is going right into storage so that you can edit what you want later. Basically, it's going to give you as much as it could possibly do.
That's right. And
that's a huge deal.
Yeah, I'll jump in there, Jason. When we were looking at speccing out this new 2K camera to put on a very big scope, one of the problems with older DSLRs like the Nikon that I have and the Canon that I have is typically you can shoot for some typical length weight of video, which ends up being from 15 to 30 minutes, and then the camera shuts off. You got to start it again. This camera that we spec'd out continuously shoots. So now we're working out ways, and luckily the guy who's involved in this is a tech genius, storing straight to big terabyte drives. And when you do this, you can really start to consider RAW. And you point out rightly, the difference between a RAW file and one that has used compression is a big deal when you're in the editing room. So few people understand if you take something like a JPEG that uses lossy compression. What that means is every time you compress it, you've lost data. So if you open it again, change it, and keep doing that, each time the image is being degraded, but you cannot retrieve the compression that's been lost. So yeah, man, just to state it outright, if we can work these systems where we can remotely tether them, get them on networks, things like this, and then turn around and dump the video straight to multi-terabyte drives, the quality is going to be such an astronomical leap. It'll blow people's minds.
Right. And the analogy would be photocopying a photocopy and then keep doing that over and over and over again. And what do you end up with, you know?
Right. Or pulling a NASA and filming the greatest thing man ever did, stepping on the moon with a crappy camera off a TV monitor of all things.
Well, but to really put this in context, what you just said about shooting directly to a multi-terabyte drive in RAW with a 50-megapixel camera at 4K or whatever it happens to be, that is what if you and I had some, I don't know, what, maybe $5,000 or something like that, we could probably pull off. We're talking about a space agency, government-funded with millions of dollars.
Exactly.
This is where this really breaks down and bothers me.
That's right.
I know enough off the top of my head that I could figure out how to do that if I just had some money to play with, and you easily could. What the hell are they giving us? Like, where's this insane data that they should be capable of retrieving?
Any amazing thing in the modern age that can be filmed in high def will be filmed in high def. This is not what the space agencies have shown us. Now, with my friend who's a technical computer genius, the main concern here is latency. Can we record at that resolution off a camera that's on a telescope, and can we get the file down onto the terabyte drive quick enough so there's no latency to interfere with the quality of what we're doing? In other words, can we save the file straight off the camera quick enough onto a big drive? And, you know, probably we can, but what you have just said demonstrates that what space agencies do is prevent us from understanding what is above the blue sky we can see, because primarily, number one, safety of the people involved in a mission. Number two, completing the mission or the mission as it's described. Number three, data. And in the modern age, data means the best damn video you can get. And the space agencies have never, ever, ever provided the best video you can get. And again, we're in the 4K era. When I was making so much, you know, hay of the moon and what a fraud it was and all the NASA footage and, you know, saying things like, don't they have telescopes on the moon nonstop? How come nothing's ever hit it? Well, lo and behold, a couple months after I said that on YouTube in the lunar wave filming era, when everyone was looking at what I was doing, they produced what they called a 4K video of a meteorite hitting the moon. First of all, it was black and white. Secondarily, it was grainy. And then the real insult was for about three frames, you saw a little white blink go on the moon. And there it is, man. That, in my view, proves beyond the shadow of doubt that they are fraudulently trying to cover their butts because nothing can hit the moon. Because if something could hit the moon, it would be filmed by now. And clearly what they were passing off as 4K video was just more shenanigans.
Well, to answer the question of can the latency thing be overcome, as far as I know, the answer is yes, if you're using solid-state drives, because my Blackmagic camera will shoot 1080p at 60 frames a second to a little card, because this is a small camera, but there's bigger versions of it that would use the full-size solid-state drives. And the solid-state drives, if anybody isn't familiar, it's basically like big RAM. There's no moving parts, so it's
right.
They're much faster. My iMac has one. It boots up in about 15 seconds, whereas a traditional drive would take somewhere between 45 and a minute to boot up, because it's accessing the information much quicker because there's no little thing spinning around reading data. So yeah, these I can tell you for a fact that at least at 1080p at 60 frames a second, it can be done, and I'm certain with better quality equipment, you can write to an SSD, because there's different levels of SSDs as well. So like the best of the best, like basically what I'm sure movie studios use, yeah, you can get that.
Well, they're starting to provide the tools. They have these little things where there's like a little SSD card with a very short cable that goes to the terabyte storage device. And it's made for exactly what we're talking about. The problem is, you know, you've got to try it, you know, because a camera heats up, and when a camera gets warm, it's not as good as when it's cool. There's just little things, but there is no doubt in my mind we can get to that point. And we're talking about shooting hopefully 2K video at something like 20 to 25 megapixels. That's a big jump. And you've got to consider, too, that YouTube is already encoding 4K video. They have for a long time. So really, it would be a huge quality leap. And when you start to talk about a scope, you know, I shoot with 11.25. You start to talk about anything from 14 to 16 inches. Those are big damn scopes.
You know, it's funny you said the YouTube thing again. That still cracks me up. Think about how much space that a 4K video would take up. And you can still upload it to YouTube for free.
Yep. You are the product, man. Whenever you're given something like that for free, you are the product.
Yep. All right, getting back to our lovely space station here. There are some who suggest that some of the astronauts are using Masonic hand signs on the videos, especially during the changing of the commanders. Masonic influence has, of course, been seen in heavy use in NASA missions before, all the way back to the beginning.
Right, and this is demonstrable. And I'll use an example to show that this goes on all the time, so people can go look it up if they think this is nonsense. On the show The Big Bang Theory, one of the most popular TV shows for many years now, and the more popular the show, the more minds that are caught in that web, the more shenanigans that will be packed into the show. There is an episode when Professor Neutron, Sheldon's childhood science TV hero, dies. He comes back to Sheldon in dreams as a Jedi Knight. You will notice in this footage that he is throwing a hand sign each time, or many of the times he comes back as the Jedi Knight in Sheldon's dreams, where the ring finger and the middle finger are held together, in essence making it look like the hand has three fingers, the index finger being one finger, the middle and ring finger being the other finger, and the pinky being the third finger. If you go back into, say, the Renaissance and look at portraits, oil painting portraits done of kings and queens, royalties and elite, you will see this hand sign thrown nonstop. There are so many examples that people have made many clips on TV. This is not really an arguable thing. Signs that we have not been taught about are thrown in this way all the time. So while I can't point to a particular video on the ISS because I just didn't look before we did this, I can give you that example of the Big Bang Theory doing it and using the hand signs that were being thrown by royalty and the elite as far back as we can see.
Yeah, and a lot of people tear apart the Masonic thing. And that stuff is that's readily available out there. I did just a quick check and found tons of stuff. The sign that they're claiming that they're making in the background on these videos is the X sign, where they have one hand over the other. And there are multiple people doing that, and I'm sure the easy explanation that someone would counter with is, well, they're just doing that to keep themselves stable in zero G. Maybe.
Well, No. I can't. You know, there's too many examples. Like, has anyone ever seen that the tarot card for the Hanged Man? And you can see how his leg is kind of, one leg is straight and the other one is cocked.
Yeah.
Go back through movies. I think it's done in Logan's Run. I'm trying to be able to name movies. People can go look. But I think Logan's Run has a guy they kill and he's got the Hanged Man leg thing. They did it in the modern show The Vikings, which is on TV now as a series. They do it all the time. Whenever you see a person who's been killed or wounded, and their leg is bent to take that aspect of the Hanged Man. As a matter of fact, there is a still that was clearly a construct passed off from 9/11 of someone supposedly having jumped from the Twin Tower, who is upside down and perfectly matches the pose of the hanged man as he's falling. This goes on all the time. And I would remind people, not too long ago, a couple generations, even the colors of flowers have meaning. And while they still do, we just don't use it very much. If you walk into a florist today and ask that florist, if I want to give my girlfriend a yellow rose, what does that mean? A good florist will be able to tell you, well, maybe you should use a white or a pink or a red because that means this. Well, this is not just nonsense. If we go back a little further in time, the people who were elite and the people who were in control of things were communicating in this way all the time. When you showed up for a dinner and there were irises at the table, they were communicating things. Every color, every flower, all these symbols had meaning. So there was all this communication going on above the head of the servants, above the head of the common man, but it was communicating something to the people who are in the know. The hand signs that we're referring to, and even just what it means to see a left eye or a right eye, these are real things, man. And unfortunately, the majority of us have grown up in a world where we were never taught there was any meaning to be, you know, understood there. But unfortunately, there is absolutely meaning in so many things that we're not aware of.
No, it's everywhere. And, you know, in centuries past, obviously the common man would have pretty much have no opportunity to understand and learn these things if they were not part of one of these secret societies. But in today's world, more and more people are catching on to it because the information's available. And it is going on. There's absolutely no doubt that these things are not by accident. It's all intentional. And this is a very real thing. Why would NASA or any other space agency be any different?
That's right. And, you know, not too many shows back ago, I had mentioned the book Dune. I had reread the entire series that was written by the father, the good versions of Dune, because I realized, and, you know, I'd read it, some of it before, but now in my, you know, advanced adult age, I realized that the book Dune is an allegory, an almost one-to-one allegory for how our world is run. And there's this whole idea in the book of a battle language that people communicate right in front of each other, but the people not in the know don't understand. They're doing it with hand signals and other little things, and they're doing it in crowds of people. They could be saying to the person who's getting the message, we're going to kill all these people in 15 minutes, and no one understands that communication has happened. You see, it's just more encoding of the things that go on that the average person has never been taught about, and in this case, it was done in the book Dune.
Right. There are tons of things you can look up about Masonic gestures that they would do. Like if one Mason was trying to communicate to another Mason, he would do a certain stance or straighten his necktie in a certain way or things like that that another Mason would pick up on, like, oh, he's a fellow Mason. He wants to talk to me.
That's right. And in the book The Devil's Pulpit, which I actually used not too many shows ago, there was a guy who was trained up to roughly the PhD level by the Vatican back in the 1800s. He was previously a surgeon, and he came to get his hands on one of two of the highest Masonic books that had made it into England at the time. The other Masonic book made it to a duke, a rich guy named Carlyle, and the king. So the three people in England who could have their hands on it were the king and his two closest guys, I guess, would be a good way to put it. But this guy who'd been trained by the Vatican got his hands on the other copy, and that's when he began to decode what the Vatican had done with religion. The reason I bring this up is because he badmouthed Masons harshly all the way through it, saying things like, if a Mason is in need, all they need do is show up, do their handshake, their nod or their wink. Not only are they instantly recognized as a Mason, but they're instantly recognized for the level of Mason they are. But even if they are the lowest level Mason, help will come flying to them, where there could be people right outside the door starving or in need, completely ignored by this group. But this man who knew the nod or the wink, this goes on and on during the book, and it demonstrates what we are talking about here. There are a group of elite people who have used media, who are using the video they pass off from space to do this type of communication within the group that is in the know. It can be as simple as maybe even the word ISS, somebody understanding what that encodes as it relates to the ancient Hebrew, maybe, or who knows, or the color of a logo, or any of these things. The problem is, it's a bit like an encoded message. Without the key, the rest of us are scrambling to try to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally correct. So there is supposed to be a sewage system aboard the ISS running through the walls. What sort of smell would this generate? Because it's never mentioned. Supposedly, the astronauts take sponge baths to keep clean, and we've seen a video where a lady was doing her hair. There are astronauts on camera saying that they wear their clothes until they are worn out, and I assume extremely filthy, because they can't wash anything. Then they just throw them out. The discarded clothes and all their other trash that they might have is collected in a special capsule that, when full, is sent off to burn up in the atmosphere.
Well, I'll tell you what. Now, there's a piece of video waiting to be shot, right?
Right. let's
go out there and actually shoot something falling in from space and burning up. I mean, come on, please. Anyone out there understands that if they took a shower this morning and do not take another shower for 3 days, what your armpits are going to smell like. The idea that sponge baths are going to, you know, cover this. I mean, at some point you're going to get rashes and all kinds of nastiness is going to be going on. These guys must have dandruff that's out of control, because they really don't have a way to clean up. It's just all nonsense. It does not hold up. And again, I would ask, we are told that space is this amazing place. We are further told that anytime something comes in from space, it has to do this burn. Anything amazing that can be filmed will be filmed. Where is our Earth observer filming something burning into the atmosphere? The closest they can come is meteorites, and for my money, meteorites are something else altogether.
Let's not forget that these astronauts have to do 2-hour workouts every single day to prevent bone and muscle degeneration.
Good point.
That's stated on camera.
Come on, man. It begs us all to just travel into our fantasy minds to begin to accept this, to not actually be able to use a no-nonsense approach to understand what conditions in an enclosed environment like that would become very quickly.
I can promise the listeners out there that after a half an hour run on the treadmill, which I do, I would not want to go on a date right afterwards.
No. It just doesn't work, Jason. It just does not work. There's no way.
And that brings us to the next point. The astronauts look happy all the time. It's almost a creepy, too good to be true smile. It's constant smiles and looks of glee, and their eyes are shining like, hey, everything's wonderful. Let's be realistic here. It would be a very uncomfortable, cramped, difficult life living on a space station at the primitive level of technology that even if we could put it up there, which maybe we do or don't, think about what it would actually be like to be on it. This is not Star Wars or Star Trek where you walk around like you're hanging out in a coffee shop. It's not. It just would not be.
And your food's bad, and the bathroom you have to use is basically this thing with a suck. I don't know what it is. You go look up the bathroom. It's this tube that you're supposed to be able to defecate in, and even with a regular toilet down here on Earth, we got to clean these things pretty regularly. And when you see the system that they're supposedly using to defecate and urinate, you're in zero G's, really. Your pee and everything else is going to float around if you make a mistake. And not only that, think about the food you've been shown that they eat. That would absolutely very quickly add to a miserable time when people have to eat food that's not really great. And it reminds me of the story recently that came out about the whole astronaut ice cream. You know, there's a business down here that's made a living selling, this is what the astronauts ate in space. Well, someone challenged them, came to find out that the company can't tell you if their ice cream has ever been to space. This is all a construct, man. Think of the company that produced Tang. I mean, what a marketing boon. Their product never went to space. and look, to this day, we still have a brand name Tang on the power of the astronauts drank Tang in the 60s.
Yeah, that's what they pretty much marketed themselves heavily off of.
Well, you got it. I mean, come on. You already know who owns this company for Tang, right? You must. It's got to be an insider to this game.
Well, to get in on the whole NASA game, especially when it was like the total shit in the 60s, there had to have been so much insider dealings going on that it's just silly, you know?
I, you know, there were whole brands, whole companies that were made multi-billionaires. I mean, think of the what's the name? McDonnell Douglas and other companies like that who, you know, came to a new prominence that was never before known, and they were privately held and they did what they want, and they've become part of the control system that we see now, part of the behind the military scenes and all these other things. And then you begin to address things like Tang or all these other products that on the power of being associated with the supposed moonshot became, you know, idioms in American culture and world culture. They knew what they were doing, man. They knew what they were doing.
And if these companies wanted to dispel all of the conspiracy theorists out there, quote unquote, All one of them needs to do is release, like, oh yeah, here's how we did our part, our contribution for the Apollo missions. It's never happened, ever.
And it never will. And this is exactly why you and I are about to talk about SpaceX. A private corporation has to tell private people exactly jack. The only people that they serve or report to are shareholders and the board. That is it. So a corporation serves. So any private portion of society that gets fed up with their nonsense and goes after them will hit a brick wall unless they can pierce the corporate veil. And anyone who wants to go out and look about the laws of piercing the corporate veil and what has to happen, it becomes so convoluted as to suggest they have looked so far and so carefully in advance that they knew they were going to be getting NASA off the stage as soon as they could and replace it with the privately held SpaceX for this very reason.
Right.
Because by the time many of us understand the lies that have gone on now, they need to have NASA gone.
The corporations have complete protection with they can claim copyright and patents and all that stuff. No, we don't have to discuss this. We're not a public entity.
Trade secrets, national security, anything. Yep. And they can even lie because no one has to show the books. You know, they can make any claim they wanted. There would be no recourse to demonstrate whether or not their claim was even valid.
Right, yeah, they could say, how do we do it? Screw you, it doesn't matter how we did it.
Or they could even say the contracts from the government that allow us to do this ensured that we couldn't talk about it until the year 30-something, you know?
Yeah, that too.
Kind of like the JFK assassination, you know, sealing the files until, you know, 75-some-odd years after the fact.
Yeah, just to make sure that everybody who would have been involved with it were physically dead at that point.
Right, it's protection.
Really good point here. There is a video with George H.W. Bush visiting the NASA Space Station Command Facility that clearly shows in the background an ISS astronaut. He's on a large screen, these giant, slightly rectangular TV screens they have, where he's standing in front of a blue chroma key with the grids. And
right.
There's ISS props, like the scenes from all the stuff I've watched. That's around him, but directly behind him is the screen. This is an official, like, this was released for the public, and there
That's
it
right.
is for all to see. And he's got an object in his hand. Like, it literally looks like you are seeing how they fake a shot.
It's your poke in the eye, isn't it, from George W. Bush, the Jr. When this video first came out, so much hay was made of it on YouTube. So many people latched onto it and were pointing out. But in my view, what stuff like this is a poke in the eye where the former president shows up and basically demonstrates they do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, this was the dad. And he looked rough. This was H.W. Bush. He was in a wheelchair. And he looked decrepit.
Right. Yep.
And they're just wheeling him through, and he just kind of looks like he's barely there, really. He's just kind of
One of the people I follow now just did a clip on George Bush, the senior, turning into the genius, Hawking. You know, he made a video showing George W. Bush turning into Hawking, the other actor. But, yeah, anyone can look up that kind of blue screen, chroma keyed, gridded screen and the president there. In my view, it's a poke in the eye. Just the people in power showing you we do what we want.
Well, what's interesting is they couldn't even – I don't think they'd even be doing like test footage or anything because – the scene was set with props that looked exactly like other
right.
shots, like the outside edge, just like you would do in a movie. You would have certain live things there tangible for an actor to touch, but then the scenes that weren't practical to do in reality are green screened in. And here he is standing, like the background would have been chroma keyed out. And it looks exactly like what the one I mentioned earlier, where the lady's standing with her hair permed out of control, and it's a static background. You know, that I just saw in that video exactly how they would have done that.
Right. And if you're in the business of documenting true things, what use will you ever have for a chroma key screen? You wouldn't have any use for a chroma key screen. And the reason you wouldn't have any use for a chroma key screen is because you would simply take a camera and point it at a factual event and then present the video. So they're basically poking you in the eye here, in my view.
And even if you had a crappy camera, it would still have, like, you still couldn't tear it apart. It's just that the image quality wouldn't be the greatest. You know, if you were using an older digital camera or something like that, yeah, it wouldn't look as sharp as a brand new one. But whatever, there wouldn't be anything there to tear apart.
Well, I would point out, you know, we know they took a keyboard up there, so that's tens of thousands of dollars. Tens of thousands of dollars would build a DSLR so far better than anything I've ever owned. And it would weigh, what, 3 pounds or something like that? It just doesn't add up.
Well, what I would say is, okay, I'm on the space station and I get to take a few personal effects. I'm going to take, I don't know, a 30 megapixel camera, and I'm going to go to the module with all the windows. I'm going to stick it out and I'm going to take a ton of pictures, and then I'm going to put it on my Instagram. I would have the biggest Instagram on planet Earth in a day.
Yeah, I mean, if I was there, you know what I'd be shooting. I'd have that baby on the moon. I'd actually spring for the 50 megapixel Canon that's come out, and I'd get a, you know, not the biggest lens in the world, and I'd point that sucker at the moon with a view like no one's ever had. But this is not what we see.
Well, and there's a reason. Exactly it. Like, why is no one doing this? That would be the absolute most breathtaking shots ever. And why? Because if you are in space, you're out of the atmosphere, there should be nothing diluting the image quality.
I can tell you why, and I can tell you you've been told why. Because space may be the final frontier, but it was made in a Hollywood basement.
And speaking of that, there's an astronaut on camera while supposing to be on the station in another one of these little clips that they put out. He says, when he's giving his little background, that he's from a little town across the United States from where he was, and I quote, talking to you from right now.
Right. And
across
that's another
low Earth orbit? Like, what are you talking about, man?
Yeah, and you can see the expression on his face, too. There's a few clips out there where seemingly the astronauts say the wrong thing. And funny thing is usually it's supposedly from like a live interview with some news station. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. And actually every live feed has a 10-second delay in case somebody drops an F-bomb or something, or, you know, a boob falls out of a spacesuit or something.
Yeah, I think it's 7 seconds minimum, just for anybody who doesn't know that. That is mandatory so that nobody says F this, or, you know, just like you said, something happens. So if that slips through, somebody's not doing their job, or it's intentional.
And not only that, I mean, what happens if their little rig that's supporting them fails or something like that? And I'm sure it'll come up, the Orion clips that we have, it'll come up in the next couple shows that we do, or the next show that we do, where I think we have at least 3 or 4 of the astronauts on record in video clips admitting flat out that the purpose for the Orion mission is to finally go beyond Earth orbit so that someday we could explore space. I mean, they're flat out telling you no one's been beyond.
And I've seen clips where there are NASA people saying that, and no one has put up their hand and said, excuse me, didn't we do that already in 1969?
Yeah, well, a lot of people on YouTube said something about it. But, I mean, look at the big push that happened not too long ago where people were going to the NASA YouTube channel and just raising hell on these nonsensical clips they were putting out. And what started to happen was NASA began closing down the comments section. So here they're trying to claim they're doing the greatest human endeavors in the world, and yet they're having to close the comments section on YouTube. If that is not the most telling thing in the world, because I can assure you, if a human being or a group of human beings does an amazing thing and then runs video and goes to talk about it, people will be amazed. But, you know, what we're seeing here is a bunch of liars lying, and they have to control on their own YouTube channel, control the conversation by completely turning off free exchange of communication.
Right. Totally. And since we're coming to the end here, I kind of want to have you as a camera guy tackle this last thing. Now, the claim with the whole Apollo thing was with the no stars thing. Let me make sure I'm saying this right. Was because of the way you had to do the f-stops and the shutters and all that, which makes sense to me. That's fine. You're still not seeing in 2017 any of the cameras that are on the outside of the ISS or anything, as we just discussed, someone could have on board. You're still not seeing stars or the outside background. It seems to be very, very much the same thing of like the Earth is a background. In this day and age, is the technology any different, or could it be set to be different where you could get stars in the background and still see the Earth, still see the astronauts, or is this just a demon of cameras in general, or would you have to completely reset everything if you wanted to, say, just point it out into deep space and take a killer picture of the stars?
You know, this whole idea is going to be dependent on the camera, and cameras, for the most part, have worked in the same way. If I take a picture of the moon, I have set my exposure so that I can see detail on the surface of a very bright object. What's that mean is that stars that are around the moon that are not very bright are not going to be picked up in the image. Now, occasionally Aldebaran or maybe a planet would be close enough. Yeah, that'll absolutely show up on film because it's bright enough. But we get back to the idea of what's important. Now, here they are in space and they're not showing star fields. Well, for the history of mankind, people have been making zodiacal charts and star charts and all this stuff. And so, you know, the ring of truth is not in it. But here's the real issue. You will never see these things, in my view. I'd be very surprised, because if they showed stars patterns in the sky, we would be able to identify them, because they're not far enough away that the shape of them would change significantly. Like, we could see a zodiacal sign or the Big Dipper or something like this. And that would allow smart people to understand and have a basis for picking apart if the images had any basis in reality. Like, what time should they have been able to see these things? They can model all these things in simple programs like Stellarium, for crying out loud. That's why they're never going to be able to show these things, because it's too big a lie to try to cover thoroughly.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. If indeed this is all being staged, as all the evidence that we have pointed out here is leading to, if they showed an accurate background, well, I should say if they showed any background, it wouldn't be accurate. It would be near impossible to show that. And I'm sure, like, if we watch Gravity and tried to pick apart the stars, they're probably not where they should be. They just made something that looked good, would be my guess.
Yeah, you know, it staggers my imagination, because we've seen all the way back in Kubrick's day, 68, 69, where there's these models of the moon, physical models of the moon being built that they're going to use to film with. They make fun of it in movies like Diamonds Are Forever, James Bond. They're making fun of us using Willard White, who is actually probably Howard Hughes, in the White House, which is actually in Vegas. You know, they're doing all these shenanigans in our face, showing the construct that the moon landing was. How is it that in the modern age, where they're producing films like Gravity, they don't have a 3D mock-up that they can use any day of the week that would put stars or anything else they wanted in the correct positions? It just doesn't make sense to me. It's almost like, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were right. They're doing it, but they only got a Hollywood basement for some reason. It's a hard thing to go at, because at some point you would imagine they would have some state-of-the-art 3D mock-ups where they could just create instantly anything they wanted to create, and it would look just like the last one they did or the next one they're going to do, becoming very hard to take them apart.
Well, the thing is, they couldn't do that earlier, so I'm assuming at this point they can't start doing it now, because then people will be like, wait a second, why is this all of a sudden different?
That's a good point. You know, that is a good point. But I'll tell you what, man, they've always got another lie. I mean, they could come up with their new hyper-real 3D 10K camera as the reason, or who knows. But I think you make a good point there, because now we're in the internet age. A big part of the awakening in the internet age was, I imagine there were a lot of us back in the 70s that saw things that didn't quite sit right. The problem was you couldn't reverse your TV. Once you saw it, that was it. You got one shot. The JFK Zapruder film, they might have showed that on the news. You got 10 seconds of it. That's it. You're not going to see it again. There was no way to record it easily. When we get to the internet age, all of a sudden, all these things that bothered us, we could review them endlessly. We could pull down the footage. We could take them frame by frame. So I think you make a substantiated point here, Jason. If all of a sudden they show us this thing we'd expected to see the whole time, the question would become, why weren't we seeing this before?
Right. And I'm sure the stupid excuse would be, well, the cameras are better now. But, you know, and that's why I asked you earlier about the exposure thing. Even though cameras are better at what they can pick up and how much data, the actual physics behind a camera functioning really wouldn't be any different, wouldn't? I mean, f-stops are f-stops. Exposure is exposure, right?
That's right. That's right. And even to put a finer point on it, you know, I have a full spectrum camera. What I did was bought a DSLR with, I think, 23 or 24 megapixels. I forget. I spent roughly $100. I think it was less than $200 to have the little thing that covers the chip modified so that it would film into UV and into IR and do the visual that it normally did. So, you know, that was a couple $100 conversion. The reason I'm pointing this out is any night of the week with that camera, I can go out and film the moon covering very dim stars that we wouldn't be able to see otherwise. So here I am, guy in my backyard, no budget, struggling to pay for the tools that I even have, which aren't the greatest tools in the world, but they're quality tools. You know, that they will produce images that are impressive. It's not even in the same world as what NASA could be doing. And why aren't they doing it? You know, they're telling you about all these great things. They're invested in having all the world be amazed by these things they're claiming they're doing. And the one way to ensure that you have the people behind you is to produce amazing video and imagery. They do it all the time for missions where there's actually a movie poster. Excuse me. Go look at some of the ISS missions. If I remember back, Mission 36, I'm pulling that out of the air. I hope I've got it right. There's actually a Hollywood-style movie poster showing the members of the crew as if it was on the marquee outside of any theater in the USA. You can see the construct of what is going on. But again, using our higher logical mind, what we would expect to see is so absent from the picture, it screams volumes.
And they can't even claim that it's a weight issue with the quality of cameras and the sizes and everything, because look at all the bullshit that people are taking to the ISS,
right?
Supposedly. They can't make that claim. But a guitar and stuffed animals and a keyboard, for example, are things that I saw. No, man, doesn't add up.
No, well, actually, that, you know, you're giving them the benefit of the doubt in saying that, because if you were going to take a 2 or a 4K camera up there with a few megapixels to back it, that would be part of the mission. That's not just something to bide your time with, to play with. That is an instrument you could poke out the window and collect empirical data. You could shoot the moon in outside our atmosphere, or a planet, or a star, or anything. I mean, look at my channel. Look at the things that I filmed that the average person thought were never worth filming, and yet I sat there and filmed them until something came of it. Well, I sure as heck didn't have what they have going for them. So the point I would make is to take a 3-pound very good DSLR or whatever it would be, wouldn't even really be the same as taking these keyboards and things. It would actually be a scientific tool.
Right. And to put bookends on this, with the amount of money that they're supposed to have at their disposal, there is absolutely no excuse whatsoever that they can't have even a half-decent camera to point out a window.
I think we've pretty much hit it. We're going to come back, and by request, Jason, we are going to again hit SpaceX hard. This is the private corporation that is running to replace NASA before too many people understand what NASA did to us. And we're also going to kick Virgin Galactic and Sir Richard Branson, the Queen's lapdog. We're going to kick him in the nuggets at the same time with his little British self in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, lying to the world, in my view. We're going to hit both of those things. And the reason we're going to do it is because so many people requested it. And to be very clear, and I know Jason is always a bit more diplomatic than I am, in my view, space agencies exist for the express purpose of ensuring that the average person in this world has no idea what is above the blue sky they can see. It is also my view that no human being or machine or anything else has been out of our atmosphere, what we call low Earth orbit. There is two possibilities here. There is the possibility that we've only been shown the lie and there's some other thing at play that we've never seen any inkling of. I tend to think that's probably not correct, but time will probably tell. And to put a fine point on it, space planets, the orbital model, and everything else about our general environment of where we would exist in, say, this universe, if there is such a thing, has been misdescribed by the very same entities we're talking about here. So, Jason, is there anything else you want to add before we close down episode 41?
I think we did a really good job of discussing the inconsistencies with the ISS. And the thing that I'm really looking forward to digging into with SpaceX and Virgin Galactic is they both have these characters, for lack of a better word, in charge of them that like is the public face of them.
That's right.
NASA never really had that other than the astronauts, you know. Not so much anyway. Like nobody was really charismatic and out there. Both of these entities, corporate entities, have these enigmatic figures that almost seem created. And I'm going to see what I can find out about them. I haven't really done any research on it yet, so.
And I would point out, Jason, we know one thing for a fact about both Elon Musk and Sir Richard Branson. They are actors. And anyone listening might want to question that, but I would point out if either one of those two supposed people produced a resume, you would find that they have both been in major motion pictures. Last one I saw Elon Musk in was an Iron Man 1, 2, or 3, or whatever, up to, I don't remember which one, but Sir Richard Branson has actually been flashed to going through security in airports in like 5 or 10 frames. I had to stop it and go back to see that it was him. When you have acted in a major motion picture, you are an actor, in the same way that Stephen Hawking is an actor. But anyhow, you want to wrap it up here, Jason?
No, that's it. I hope I see. Hope everybody comes back for the last part. What's probably going to be the last part that we do on this for now. I hope you guys are really enjoying what we're doing. I'm putting a lot of research into this to bring you this information, and I'm hoping it's having the effect that it seems to be, and that's that people are challenging the notions of what we've been handed about space, and we're going to keep working hard for you.
There it is, man. The only reason we're going to continue down and hit SpaceX and Virgin Galactic is because from the messages from so many people who wanted us to tackle these things, because they have gone out and challenged some of the things we've talked about and found that they cannot balance the spreadsheet. It does not add up. So anyhow, that brings episode 41 covering the International Space Station, which is another way to code 9/11, by the way, for the third time. And I hope you all come back to see our final show, just ripping the bejesus out of space every way we can to try to use repetition to undo some of the damage that has been done to us. So there it is. Cheers.